How you doing there, bud?
I'm sort of weird. How are you?
Curious what you mean by sort of weird, buddy.
I'm sort of in like sad boy mode. Sad.
Yeah.
I've been listening to a lot of Smashing Pumpkins, if that's any indication.
I thought you were gonna say Smash Mouth, which I was really excited that your sad boy music is all star, but I guess not.
I'm sorry to disappoint you.
Yeah, it's quite a disappointment, buddy. That's my depression. I just listened to All Star by Smash Mouth on a loop. I don't. That's a lie. I just lied to you.
Oh, okay, I was about to say that's a weird like cross section of emotions. You're the
Although
best, but I'm very sad. But also, I'm an all-star.
I did sort of give myself Stockholm syndrome for that song, because I hadn't like really listened to it when it was actually around as a thing. So when I was making Shrek jokes, I went back and like, it was everywhere, so of course I had encountered it in its natural habitat, but I'd never like seen the music video or whatever. So shortly after the whole Shrek fiasco started, I watched that thing like a million times, and I sort of like All Star now. I sort of think it's a good song. I don't turn to it in my dark hours, but I'm like, this is sort of catchy, and I think it deserved to be popular.
Smash Mouth did its job of making a hit.
Yeah.
It certainly did.
I have not pursued the rest of the Smash Mouth discography, but that song in particular is, I think it deserved to be exactly as popular as it was. It's catchy, it's got a little bit of heart to it, but without becoming saccharine. No wonder people related to it in the, like, very early aughts, late 90s.
Fun fact, he was the first man or person, I think, to do frosted tips. I think that was him.
What a revolutionary! He made
Yeah.
possible everything that came after him. I am overjoyed. How did you find this out? Are you doing like the oral history of Frosted Tips? Is that how you've sold out to Vice?
Man, I should.
You should propose, please, for the love of God, propose that to like, I mean, not Gawker, BuzzFeed or Vice, I think would definitely. I mean, someone did a fucking like history of or like investigative reporting and very heavy air quotes on the naked ugly guy from Friends. So your history of Frosted Tips is super scholarly by comparison.
Yeah, I'm gonna go back to the 90s. There's so little written, and the Wikipedia article is only, it's not even a paragraph, honestly.
But it's such an important part of history.
Frosted tips, where did you come from?
Who made you and why? I wrote a bunch of nonsense while watching a pirated version of Deadpool a while back, because that was how I figured I was going to make myself get some work done, is like distract myself enough that I would rather be doing the work. But then Deadpool turned out to be better than I was expecting, so it was a little too distracting.
Yeah, it snuck up, it sneaks up on you when you expect a bad movie to be worse than it is.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still glad I didn't pay any money for that. Like, thank God. I'm so glad I did not see that in theaters with the kind of person who watches Deadpool. Like, I don't really want to be associated with that kind of person, and I certainly don't want to spend time crammed in a theater next to them. That seems like hell.
Yeah.
I'm basically... Sorry, go ahead.
You realize I did do that.
Yeah, well... I can treasure you deeply in my heart. And also think that most people who share your tastes are terrible trash men with terrible trash taste who probably chew their popcorn with their mouth open and think eating in theaters is a normal, healthy thing to do rather than a heathen slap in the face of God himself. So, you know.
It's a binary thing. Yeah, I can...
I mean, not that I get overworked up about that or anything, you know. But it was, I mean, I don't even know if I would say that Ryan Reynolds' performance was all that good. It's just the cumulative effect of the movie was, like, better than I expected. So, I mean, I get why nerds liked it.
Yeah. It was super snarky and bloody, which is only, it just delivered on what it said it would be. It's dumb and it's bloody, and there's a lot of bad jokes.
Yeah, like on all of those counts, there it was. It did not really bring anything extra to the table, but that's so fine. I watched on purpose a TV movie called Sand Sharks the other day, which is just sharks that swim in sand and eat people whole. So I can't fault Deadpool, is what I'm saying, for not, like, rising above and beyond, given what else I watch.
I want to take a stab at, was it the Sci-Fi Network?
I mean, I don't know. I watched it through Amazon. I don't know if it was actually a Sci-Fi Channel original. I don't think so. I think it was some other equally awful production company. It starred Hulk Hogan's daughter.
Yeah, that's you know, that just lets you know the quality of that movie right off the bat.
She was a shark expert, and this is the part that I have, like, complicated feelings about, so now you're stuck hearing about them. So she was in, like, super short shorts and just, like, smacking gum as she delivered all of her lines and, like, super, like, she did not make an effort to sound more educated or more, you know, how people will put on a scientist voice and try to sound like they actually... She did none of that. She just sounded like a fucking valley girl. But in some ways, I think that made it compelling and brilliant. Because, like, most people sound extremely hokey and bad when they deliver, like, science garbage sounds. Because they're trying to sound like it means something, but it really doesn't. But she just delivered it so, like, ain't give a shit. Like, all of her lines were delivered with the same, like, upward inflection at the end, like, sort of like, as you would imagine, a dismissive, blonde, fake nail, early 2000s archetype would be. And it was made in 2010, so she was about 10 years behind on what her aesthetic was. But all of these lines about, like, sequencing DNA and running additional tests and whatever science garbage they made up were just delivered that way as she, like, smacked on her gum. Which is amazing! Like, in some ways, it made it much more convincing than if she had tried to, like, put gravitas behind those. Yeah, it was a complicated performance, and I feel like I should be celebrating the feminist accomplishment of being like, here's this super serious shark expert, and also, she's just kind of a mean girl. I mean, she was never actually mean to anyone, but she had that whole look going. It was spectacular. So, a complicated piece of cinema, and I thank Brooke Hogan for her contribution to it. There's also, like, the worst CG I've ever seen, and they couldn't get enough extras for the beach party scene. So you could see, like, very close to each other where they had just put in the same beach partier doing the same dance move. Because they did, like, an aerial shot of, like, what was supposed to be a huge beach party, but you'd be like, there's that guy, and there's that guy again, and there's that guy, and there's that guy again. Whoops. So.
It's going on the Criterion.
Yeah, it's going to be an ageless, deathless classic handed down for years. It was actually bad. Like, it was, normally I like really bad movies, but it didn't even accomplish good bad. It was just bad, but I admire it. So, moral is, I can't fault Deadpool.
That's Keanu, finally.
Yeah?
I did that to myself.
How was that?
It was not what I was expecting. It was like one of those classic 90s movies with the action and the Hap was like, we're not qualified to do any of this, but we're going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
And that was a very long, romantic, like, oh, she's a bad guy, but I'm a good guy. And it turns out that she's a good guy in the end. And it was very, like, unflinchingly textbook, which I was disappointed in, but it was pretty funny still.
Were you expecting it to be more of a satire?
Yeah, I thought it'd be like a satire. I was like expecting it to be more like the Key and Peele skits with social commentary and like depth and grace, but
I sort of
they were like, what were you gonna say?
I just wonder if they're tired, right? Like, I sort of have to wonder if after doing all of this really strong commentary, they're just like, I'm going to phone it in and get a paycheck. Because that's what I would do. What were you saying, though?
You're right, actually. I think that's exactly the feeling I got from the first. It was like, we're just going to make our money. let's just like get this done so we can get some good deals from this.
Yeah, that's how I feel whenever I see, like, something that's really formulaic from someone who I know is, like, a smarter writer than that. I'm like, oh, okay, you just wanted to do this project and make the money on it and, like, hang out with your buddies for however long shooting took. That's fine. You know, rich people can do that, I guess. Like, whatever that fucking Kevin Smith movie that's coming out that's gonna be, like, his daughter and some other celebrity's daughter, and they're fighting Nazi sausages? Okay, maybe you haven't seen the trailers for that. So...
How... Kevin Smith is a monster. He's just a monster at this point.
I don't know, I have to love where he's just decided that he really loves making movies, and he really loves this handful of people, and whoever additionally he meets along the way, so he's just gonna make movies with those people, because he can do whatever he wants now. And I respect that. I know that's a little cliche to say about Kevin Smith, and I made it about myself for no good reason, but that sort of, I don't know, is that not kind of what you would do if you suddenly had the fame and power to just get studios to make your pet projects? Maybe you're better than Kevin Smith and conceivably me on that count.
No, that's I would use it for vacations. I don't know. I try and keep my integrity. I'd do like one, I'd split it up between years. Like one integrity thing, one make all the money. and then one integrity thing.
Man, I feel like Kevin Smith has hit the point of rich where he doesn't really know what money is anymore. He can't think that movie starring his daughter fighting Nazi sausages is gonna be a box office smash. He can't possibly think that, because it can't be. There is no world in which... I mean, I say that, but it's totally going to be on some level, but it can't be.
So, are these actual Nazi... So, these... They're actually fighting sausages?
Yes.
Like, the food product sausages?
Yes. So... It's these two... Like, I guess they're supposed to be teens. Maybe they actually are teens. I admit I don't keep tabs on Kevin Smith's personal life. Or even normally his professional life. Tumblr made me know about this, and now it won't stop. And they're in a band together, I think, and they hang out, and they're besties. And then one day at the convenience store, one or both of them work at Nazi Sausages. And that is what I know of this film. I could probably find out what it's actually called. Yoga Hosers is what it is called. It's a sequel to Tusk. Oh yeah, it stars Johnny Depp's daughter. That's the other person in there.
Well, I guess I'm gonna have to see that. There's no way I can't not see it.
I don't know, man. I don't have explanations or justifications for any of this. I will say the one thing that I sort of am hopeful about with it is because it's starring the director's daughter and then also one of the co-stars' daughter, I feel like it's going to be much less creepy than the average movie about teen girls fighting Nazi sausages would be. Like, I feel like it's not gonna be super objectifying. I shouldn't be optimistic. But I kind of am about that. It's kind of like Brooke Hogan as scientist in Sand Sharks, where I'm like, this should be bad, but I think there are going to be circumstances that make this better.
They didn't do any of the cool carnage or anything, or the
what?
So it's probably gonna be a little less a little less gross than if it was two unnamed Hollywood starlets.
I mean I have a suspicion, right, that Kevin Smith is not gonna film his daughter's tits. That's my assumption.
I hope he does not.
See, that's what I'm saying. It's like, not that Kevin Smith films are, despite all of their flaws, they're not usually super, like, creepy cam in that sense. Like, a lot of campy horror movies will be like, and here's the changing scene.
That's true. He doesn't usually go for that stuff.
Yeah, he's like tacky in other ways, but he's usually better about not being like that. And now it's starring his daughter, so he definitely can't be.
That would send some major red flags.
Yeah. So that's my one, like, I feel like because tedious men are always like, well, I had a daughter and then I learned that women are people. Whoops. And I'm like, okay, but you're married and you didn't get that before then? All right, sure, okay. But because of that, there's like a shred of hope that this is going to be actually like, and I don't know if this is good or not in terms of moving the art of cinema forward, but I don't give a shit about the art of cinema. Basically parody. Parity as an equal to all of the dumb comedies like this with male leads in their treatment of the leads. Like, I think it's not going to be slimy and objectifying.
Yeah, it'll probably be like more gore and like camp in the goofy sense.
Yeah.
Which did you see Tusk?
No, I wasn't especially interested.
Tusk, it's gonna be funny probably because he's like Kevin Smith likes horror, but I feel like he likes comedy a little bit more.
Yeah.
Because Tusk is literally a man being transformed into a walrus.
Yeah, I mean, it's a horror comedy. That's explicitly the it's about Nazi sausages. It's not going to be a horror comedy. I mean, like, if they tried to play that straight, can you imagine?
It might be better if they played it straight. That'd be pretty great.
It would definitely be very bad. Oh, God, though. Imagine if they tried to, like, really be like, okay, let's take seriously the cultural impact of Nazis. But they're still sausages. That would be the worst movie ever, and I kind of wish that's what this was going to be, instead of, it's, like, from the trailer, it's very explicitly, like, a campy horror comedy, more along the lines of the Gingerbread Man series than I would say anything else. I don't know if you've watched those.
I've seen, like, the first one. That Gingerbread Man has a mouth.
Yeah, it's gonna be kind of that. But Nazi sausages?
I read a comic about the Gingerbread Man.
Yeah?
That was bad. It was very bad.
I believe you. Not just because most comics are bad, although most comics are bad, but just in general, it doesn't seem like it would be well done.
Yeah, they just went for the standard, this Gingerbread Man, he's gonna make comments about tits and stab people, and it's like, Gingerbread Man shouldn't be doing either of those things, and he gets away in a cookie. That box, that's weird. Isn't that very...
I mean, it is true that Gingerbread Men should not be doing either of those things. I would say, when I think about Gingerbread Men, if I were to purchase, for instance, a Gingerbread Man, and it made comments on titties and stabbed me, I would be mad. I would file a letter of complaint. That's why you gotta hold on to your proof of purchases, y'all. Just in case.
Sometimes the food you buy will say inappropriate things, and if it does that, you have your constitutional right to...
You're protected by the FDA against sexual harassment by baked goods.
Yeah.
The Consumer Protection Act is here to help you with that.
That's so real.
Yeah.
I wish I could bring some people to the FDA.
Like, just, okay, clarify for me here. Is this a complaint about food safety? Is this just wishing that the FDA covered people who are rude to you? Like, are you just like, well, this one guy I met was rude to me, and I would like to return him to his manufacturers?
Yeah, I sort of like the rude people more, now that you say that. I wish I could return rude people back to where they came from and be like, this person is broken, because they are mean to me.
You know, just rude-born instead of food-born illnesses.
That'd be great. This person has punch disease. Get them out of here.
Issuing a recall on all people from Delaware born whatever date because they have punch disease. Please send them back at once. That'd be better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Delaware. What a shithole.
What did Delaware do to earn your wrath?
They are, I don't like their attitude.
Okay.
They're very uppity. They're uppity for a very small place.
Okay, all right, sure. Do you feel the same way about Rhode Island?
Rhode Island is gross.
Hold on, I want to clarify something. Do you believe that people's sort of affection for and pride in their state needs to be, or, you know, pride in themselves specifically, needs to be directly proportionate to the size of their state? Like, is this about how they feel about their state or how they feel about themselves for being from a small state?
I think it's more how they feel about themselves. Like, they think because they're from a small state, they're just, like, more moral or more on the up and up and just, like, we do things our way and it's worked for centuries because no one ever leaves. And it's not that people don't want to leave, it's just that they're too poor to leave because you're a small place and your job opportunities are very slim, and it usually goes to families who are generationally in there.
I'm detecting some bitterness here, I think.
I guess I'm a little bitter.
I have a follow-up question to my follow-up question, which is, what about Texas? Texas is very large. Texans are very arrogant. Is that okay?
I think Texas can... I think Texas is just secretly very, very disappointed in itself. and they like, it's all bluster, you know?
So you think
I don't think
Texas
it's
is...
cool that they think they're great, but I feel bad for them.
So they're like the insecure school bully who beats people up because it's sad at home. Or because they can't do math. Texas is that guy. They're like, I think I'm stupid. Give me your lunch money. I think I'm stupid. Give me your lunch money. Oh, here we go. It's a more offensive bully accent.
I'm just that's just my personal opinion. I've been to Texas only once, and it was pretty much people either being far too nice, like aggressively nice, or being like super like, you ain't from here, I don't know you.
Yeah, I mean, I've never been to Texas, but that confirms all of the things I already thought were true about Texas. So you know, nice.
Mm-hmm.
I did look at moving to Texas after college, but Rachel wouldn't agree to Texas. So.
I want to say you actually might have literally dodged a bullet.
I mean, yeah, there's a decent chance of me getting shot in Texas, I think. I do have a terrible personality, and people in Texas are highly armed. They just have...
It doesn't even matter what your personality is like.
That's fair, yeah. They're just heavily armed and testy. Temperamental. Okay, we should stop stereotyping Texans.
What are they gonna do?
Possibly shoot us!
That's true.
Whereas if we stereotype, I don't know, people from Connecticut, for instance, they just won't let us into Yale.
Oh no! not Yale.
Won't endorse us on their LinkedIn accounts. That's what people from Connecticut can threaten us with. I mean, also there are parts of Connecticut that'll shoot you, but not as fun to make fun of, because I just feel sad about that.
Yeah. There's... Connecticut's weird. It's easily, like, the Richie Richies, and then it's, like, maybe, like, a few miles away, it's just, like, abject poverty.
Desolate post-industrial wasteland. You know those, like, if you took the population of the United States here and like boiled it down to like whatever arbitrary like easy to comprehend number, there would be this many rich people and this many desperately poor people. That's just Connecticut. In Connecticut, they just made that experimental space so we could just witness the tragedy of income inequality. But I don't think anyone told people in Connecticut that it was a controlled science experiment or sociology model. Connecticut's just a really tragic example of data visualization. It's people who took data visualization too far to teach us about income inequality, and it's time someone freed the people of Connecticut.
Oh man, that's so sad. I would love to see like the poor parts of Connecticut and the rich parts of Connecticut just have to like in Parks and Rec, just they have to join together. Just like they have to merge towns and just like neighbors, like rich people would have to wake up every day and see someone outside rooting through their garbage for recyclables, and just be like, "Well, that's my neighbor. That's my buddy."
I feel like that already happens in major cities and it hasn't fixed anything.
It's true.
I mean, I wasn't gonna make the point, but like, New York exists. Not that New York isn't pretty segregated on income issues as well. Like, Manhattan exists and is a place, and then other, but like, I feel like cities are an example of like rich people can live cheek by jowl with poverty and just kind of put on blinders a little bit.
Oh yeah, that's real. I got my blinders on. Everybody's got blinders on in the subway.
Yeah, I mean, Portland has a semi-permanent homeless camp set up. That's like 2 blocks from where I get my comics. And I 100% I'm just like, I'm just gonna cruise past that and not think about my culpability in this. Just gonna walk right on past. So, we're all terrible people. And Connecticut is the worst of all, and nothing can fix it.
You gotta sleep in the bed you made, you know? And if it's a bed of money, then you're better off than most. That's cool.
Wait, do you think rich people are literally dragons? Is that how you picture the mega rich? They just sleep on a literal bed of money? Because I'm for it.
I have no doubts about that. I don't even think like if when you reach a, I don't think the 1% use banks. I think they just have empty pools that they put all their money in. Scrooge McDuck.
Yeah. And then they sleep on a raft made of lighter weight banknotes on top of the pool of money. Yeah. Different international denominations made of different things. I would imagine the plastic banknotes that like the UK and shit have are a little denser. So it's probably like US notes on top and then the plastickier ones underneath.
Oh, no doubt. Just like there's no doubt about that.
So that's income inequality in America. Have you read any comics recently?
Oh,
'Cause I basically haven't, so I'm counting on you on this one. I've been reading prose books.
jeez.
No?
I did read some of Rebirth. I read all of the Rebirth that's out.
Yeah. Is
It's
it?
still bad.
Yeah, I would imagine. Seems like it would be.
I guess the whole thing is like love is out of the DC universe and they're trying to bring love back. It was very cheesy. There was a whole bunch of like it's them literally redoing arcs from past runs of their comics. So they're redoing Black Manta killing Mara, because Black Manta killed Arthur's son and the old Aquaman, and now Black Manta is just gonna kill his wife. It's the same thing. It's a little different, but it's the same thing. And they're trying to do, Wally West is back, but it's just honestly, when the Flash came back after the Infinite Crisis, it's like the only one that's good in my opinion is like I like Green Arrow's one because it's basically just Green Arrow and Black Canary falling in love, and that's the whole comic. And it's sweet. It's like, oh, okay, fine.
I mean, that's always been sort of a DC Universe highlight. I feel like, okay, just gonna have a bad opinion for a second. I feel like the DC Universe does better when they're just like, we're gonna spend some time on some romance. Like, all the stories I can think of in the DC Universe that people have, like, broadly responded positively to are the ones where they're like, we're just gonna develop this romance for a fucking sec. So Batwoman and Batwoman's, I guess they were engaged for a second, and then editorial was like, nah. But her cop partner, and then Green Arrow and Black Canary, people fucking love. Lois Lane and Superman is still undyingly goddamn popular. I mean, Wonder Woman has never had anyone in her life who isn't tragically boring aside from Superman, and that's just a bad pairing. But I'm sure they could do it, right?
All of Wonder Woman's boyfriends get murdered or turn out to be Hades.
I mean, maybe that's a really good, Hades finally comes to terms with Hades' feelings for Wonder Woman, and we get to see them grow. Ideally, not together because he was doing some weird manipulations, but like, they both grow up. I think DC just needs to become a rom-com. Just.
That would make me so sad, but it probably should. it definitely. They did do that whole like it's oh it's Valentine's Day. We're gonna do a bunch of romance comics. Whoa, look at all these people getting falling in love, and it was really weird.
Yeah, but that's like a one-off weirdness. What they need to do is go like, okay, we're gonna still keep doing superheroics. Great. That's the genre. The plot is these idiots fall in love with each other. Right? So it's still caped crime fighting. They still do all the caped crime fighter things. It's just the sort of those are sort of the B plots, and the A plot to every single one of them is like, these superheroes are falling in love, we guess. And they just spend their time developing that. It would be so much better.
Yeah, people want to see love. People want to know that love is real for fictional characters.
Yeah, I mean, love's not real. Love is a fake lie. But superheroic mega plots are not interesting. And people, it's much easier for people to write interesting romances in the face of superheroic backdrops than it is to make a boring fucking superhero war interesting.
Yeah.
Much easier to write a compelling character if you're just like, and the motivation is they're falling in love. There you go! You wrote a fucking character! Like, easier and better if they were just like, cool. Let's make that a substantial part of it, because then it wouldn't be like, throw another alien fight in. Also, why would, are they really just like, it's the same plot event? Is that on purpose? Do you know if DC's doing that deliberately, or if they've just genuinely run out of ideas?
So the whole point, I think, is that they're trying to get back to the much better storyline of 52,
But it's
which they
not a better
scrapped.
story if they're telling the same story again.
Yeah, it's like them. It's them at once going back to that and also trying to introduce the Watchmen to the universe. I don't know what's gonna happen. There's this big bad that's like coming out and being like, "Oh, we want to fuck everybody up because we
Wow, what a
want to bring
shock.
back people we care about."
It's headed towards a
And
weird, boring crossover
yeah, I think crossovers need to stop just for a little bit. Just a little break from that would
They
be
need to
good.
stop forever. You can have characters from different series in the same comic, right? But every series needs to stand alone. Or you're just making it impossible to be a goddamn consumer.
Yeah, no one's gonna. I'm not gonna. I'm not. No one's gonna buy all those books. That's stupid. That's a dumb amount of money just to read one, like, oh, everything's back to normal.
Every single book should have an entirely standalone storyline, and then if you do buy the additional ones, it should be like a fun treat. Like, oh, I got this extra information.
That's how they should do it. Hopefully, they will. All the issue ones don't tie into each other that much, but it's gonna be a clusterfuck.
It's always a clusterfuck, and they always think it's gonna be better if they like reset to before the clusterfuck, and then they're like, oh no, how did the clusterfuck clusterfuck us again? No shit, you dumbasses, you did the same thing.
It's gonna be fun reading the fallout. It'll be great.
Hey, I mean, I should stop running my mouth on it since I don't read superhero comics at this point. But every time I try, I stop because of the fucking clusterfuck events. Like when I was really into Swamp Thing, and then they were like, JK, it's time for some event. And I'm like, I don't want to buy the rest of this shit. I just want to know what's going on with Swamp Thing's emotions, and being a swamp, because I'm interested in post-humanism. But like bioorganic post-humanist side me the fuck, but not a goddamn event. Okay. And then I was reading Miss Marvel, and then they did the same thing again. I don't. And Captain Marvel, even before that, I think, because I was reading Captain Marvel, and then I got annoyed because of some fucking event where she had to stop being in space doing space things to go deal with some feelings shit that had 20 billion tie-ins. And I was like, oh, Miss Marvel, what a breath of goddamn. Nope, time for the world-ending fucking clusterfucktastrophe. Nice. And I mean, admittedly, two of those are Marvel, but the point still stands.
Yeah, you'd be so mad at Civil War
Yes.
too.
Yes, I would. I mean, there's a reason I've stopped watching the Marvel movies, which I was really enjoying for like a minute. It's because it's now the same thing. It's just a cluster bomb of like characters who are basically underdeveloped. You get 30 seconds on each one in each movie, and then it's just ham-handed lore fuckery. I don't care! Just show me Captain America doing the right thing, and I will give you $200. Like, just be like, here's Captain America. He's trying his goddamn best, and don't muck it up.
That's compelling.
See, okay, this is my unpopular goddamn opinion. The first Captain America movie, was the best Marvel movie. Because of its purity of goddamn vision, in terms of like, here's Steve Rogers, he tries. The Iron Man series is way better than the Captain America series, like taken cumulatively, because in every single one, they were like, here's Iron Man. He's a dumb baby with man baby feelings. Let's work it out. So those were all really good.
Iron Man is, yeah, it's sort of, I even forget that guy's Robert Downey Jr. is now Tony Stark forever.
Yeah, he doesn't really. He just that's his role. And also, I mean, there's a reason that that works because there are some strong parallels between the dude and the character. Both in terms of having like sort of bad political opinions, but being deeply likable, right? Like, trying to basically do the right thing, despite having a really deeply flawed understanding of how the political system works. It's true of both of them.
Yeah. Oh, Robert Downey, just stop talking.
Oh, God, I still think sometimes late at night when I'm angry for no reason about celebrities, where he's like, well, there are no liberals in jail. I'm like, really? For real, though? For real? I don't remember the exact quote, but it was something like, you can't come out of prison a liberal. And I'm like, really? Because there's fucking socialist political prisoners. And like...
I don't even... When he said that...
Admittedly, I saw it on the tumbles. So I will not swear that this is, like, responsibly sourced. But, yeah, something like that.
Well, that's certainly a strong, wrong opinion.
Right?
Nelson Mandela.
Yeah! I mean, it is maybe possible that you can't be a rich white person and come out of prison a liberal if you're like, well, I sure do held everyone around me in contempt. Better not have to deal with anyone of a lower social class again. Maybe then you're like straight Republican fucking ticket.
But, so he's basically assuming you go to prison and are just like, oh, this is what poor people are like. No, thank you.
I would not swear that. I'm trying to find the exact quote because I feel like... Oh, yeah, in 2009, he said... and this is not a great source. This is like Stereo Gum. It's, you can't go from a $2,000 a night suite at Le Mirage to a penitentiary and really understand it and come out a liberal. Which is even grosser! Like, you can't live a rich, privileged life and then experience some... Admittedly, I think because he mostly had drug problems, obviously I think they're disproportionate, right? I don't think anyone should go to prison for having a drug problem. That's fucked up, obviously. But experience some consequences, as set out by the legal system, and still be a liberal. You just can't possibly do that.
Oh. Oh, poor baby. I like that he had to even name the hotel.
Right. I get where that's, like, for effect or whatever, but Jesus shit, what a... God, what a shit, though! What a shit!
All the best rich people are total knobs.
Man, you know what disappointed the shit out of me? Is fucking Dwayne The Rock Johnson is a Republican.
Oh, of course. That guy's way too rich to be.
There's rich people with swallowable political views. Not many, but nevertheless.
How Republican is he? Like, super?
I don't know specifics. I don't think he's particularly outspoken about it, but he's made some statements on record about, like, yes, he's definitely Republican.
I just watched The Scorpion King.
Yeah?
Damn.
I mean... Yeah. So, my point is... They're like Iron Man. They've got some bad politics. But they are also noted for, like, personal... charitable work, I guess, doing lots of, like, reaching out individually, like Dwayne The Rock Johnson fucking loves granting make-a-wishes or whatever.
Okay.
And, like, on the one hand, that's mostly just, like, that doesn't count for that much, really, when you're perpetrating and perpetuating systemic injustices, right? But that's what makes Iron Man interesting, is, like, he's deeply wrong, and he's trying. He's got probably the right values, and entirely the wrong idea of what those values mean. He's like, people matter, I'm gonna blow people up, or whatever. So, you know, they're the same person, they're both bad people, whoops! But go back to making those films, rather than like, it's gonna be really epic! Because here's the thing. I need to get off my rant horse, but I'm gonna gallop it this last mile and then
I'll
stop.
Keep riding it, because it's a galloping somewhere.
Nerds love describing shit as epic, right? But epic is bad. Epic is just bad. Epic just basically means huge in scale or scope. And that's not good. That can be done in a way in support of something that's actually good, right? But what makes something goddamn watchable is a small core at the center of it of human goddamn interest. It's like that Stalin quote about how the death of one person is a tragedy and the death of millions is a statistic. Saving the world is exciting, but saving the world doesn't goddamn matter.
Oh, man. You just quoted Stalin.
Okay, I don't agree with Stalin, obviously, right? I'm not a Stalinist. Grace, this is almost as bad as when you were like, maybe genocide, though. Maybe eugenics. Just has to be the right eugenics. So neither of us are free from sin here, Aaron.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, there's... We're not Stalinist or genocidal. We just have very strong opinions.
Oh, God. But my point is that it seems to be true. And I am willing to back the fuck up on this one. Scope and epicness generates excitement. Small, focused, emotional work generates attachment. And I think attachment is more and notice I'm not saying identification, that's a whole other kettle of fucking fish. You can be attached to someone with whom you do not particularly feel that you are the same. And I think identification is more complicated than that, but that's a whole other thing. I'm like physically shoving it to one side because that's not the point right now. The point is you can be attached to someone and not be like, that person is the same person as me, I think I am that person. And what generates attachment is doing the closer emotional work. It's the moments where Iron Man looks at a little kid, or the moments where we see, like, Pepper Potts trying to fucking deal with the fact that Iron Man is a piece of shit, but she loves him. You need that, or the epicness is just fucking noise. And there's, you know, noise has its place and its interest, and can be good. But there's limits to it, and you have to do it really well for it to be worth consuming. And it's much easier to do attachment than it is to do successful noise, I think.
That's real. It's definitely more... You're definitely going to catch more people's attention with an honest emotional journey than a bunch of knobs and capes and costumes just blowing shit up, but... the time will go faster with a lot of shit blowing up.
And that's why you do both. That's why the Iron Man series was good. Because you tied it in with the moments of actual shit that matters, and then you were like, also the world's gonna end or whatever. But the moment that mattered when the world was gonna end or whatever was when Tony was blacking out and tried to call Pepper. That's the impact. Not the world blowing up, which is exciting and cool and fun to watch, but the reason it matters is he's blacking out and he tries to call Pepper and he feels bad about what a shitbag he is.
And then she leaves.
I don't really remember, but probably you're right. I believe you. But, like, yeah, that's what fucking counts. So that's the reason why the whole DC universe needs to be a rom-com.
It'd make more compelling stories for sure.
I'm not saying they should get rid of all the shit blowing up. I'm just saying for every issue, right, where they're like, oh man, shit blows up, they also need to set it up so it's like, shit's blowing up, and I have a date that I have to go on, but I can't go on this... I'm basically trying to describe Silver Age Fantastic Four, aren't I? like, doing the Archie, like, I have to be on this date and this date at the same time, but one of the dates is fighting Doctor Doom.
Yikes.
I'm pretty sure these are also plot lines to a Spider-Man newspaper strip, but you can do it better than that, and I think the Spider-Man newspaper strip is probably better than any of the recent Marvel movies in terms of being... not a shit ton of noise for... I love the Spider-Man newspaper strips growing up, and I'll stand behind them. I shouldn't. They were bad, but I loved them.
Like the old ass ones?
Yeah. I mean, this was like... this would have been the 90s, so... it's like pretty old.
I remember those with the classic print.
Yeah.
Classic costume.
Yep.
Golly gee willikers.
You know, it was lots of like, oh no, Spider-Man has to get to Mary Jane's play, but also Spider-Man has to fight mostly Kingpin, I feel like. I feel like it was basically just Kingpin who we fought through the entire, and I don't know if that's because they didn't need him in the actual comics at that time, or what was going on there, but it was always Kingpin. That's my hot take. I mean, I read the fucking Star Trek novelizations, because I was like, really, you get to learn more about Data's personal growth journey, so my tastes might not be trustworthy, but I still think I'm right. Oh no, that's the end of every episode of The Trades, isn't it? Where I'm like, I still think I'm right. Fuck.
That's like a catchphrase. That's not the end, though.
Yeah. So, do you have other thoughts on 52? I actually want to hear what you think. I don't just want to shout. I just had some shouting that I had to do. Spiritually.
Well... 52 is gonna be a shit show.
Yeah.
It's the only thing they can do to save it is if they bring back Booster Gold. If they bring back Booster Gold, it might be okay. But that dude's up in space, and I don't even think he's a part of this timeline. They need to stick with one timeline, because right now they got three in the mix.
Yeah.
It's confusing. They really need to get... I like that they have Miller in on it, but they have to, like... I'm surprised Miller was like, yeah, this is okay, I'll do this. I think he's just lonely. No one read his new Batman, and he's just like, ah, why don't people like my new Batman? I know, I'll just go back to working for DC, because I'm broken. I'm broken now.
I think he's been broken inside since at least the late 90s, though. Like, whatever was human in his heart has shattered.
I just want there to be a scene where it's just Rorschach and Batman looking at each other and being like, there does not need to be two of us. There does not need to be two. There's like already 15 Batmans. There's like 30 Robins. We don't need any more Bat people. There's so many Bat people right now. It's sort of... There's so many Green Lanterns. There's like so, oh man, everybody's just gathering more and more shitty members of their weird teams. The only person who doesn't have new people is Wonder Woman and Green Arrow.
Did you mean Alan Moore instead of Miller when you were talking about, or is Miller
I
doing?
did. I mean, Alan Moore did Watchmen.
Yes. I
Okay.
assumed that Miller was doing something for DC that I hadn't heard about, so I was just gonna go with it. But Moore did Watchmen. Although honestly, it doesn't matter. They're kind of the same dude. I mean,
I
one's
always. They are
one's a
the same person. If you look at photos of them, they basically look the exact same.
I think it's funny that one's, and I'm using I think it's funny to mean I think it's horrifying that, one's like a far rightist douchebag, and one's a far leftist douchebag, but their actual political opinions are indistinguishable. Quite bad.
I think Alan Moore is at least a comparable writer. Frank Miller, I do believe Frank Miller, when he's not blaming all of his problems on women, can write some decent storylines, but they always end in, and then they murdered him, and revenge felt good but empty. God.
I think Miller has sort of, I don't know, I still like Sin City. I haven't reread it recently, but I really liked Sin City when I read it. I still have affection for that moment, but I feel like his writing has not really gone anywhere but downhill, where he just took the parts of Sin City that only worked because there was some core of humanism in Sin City and was like, oh, this is what you guys liked, right? You didn't like the part where this guy is a total fucking self-aware sad sack, and where everyone reading the story is like, ah, oh, Jesus, what a sad sack. You guys thought he was super cool and good, so I'll do more of that. It's bad.
Yeah.
Whereas, who knows what Alan Moore's fucking problem is? Do you think he's actually a witch? Like, do we think Alan Moore thinks he's a warlock?
Alan Moore thinks he's like God's brother, or like he's some weird. Alan Moore probably actually thinks he's Ozymandias. Came from the Watchmen universe. And he's warning everybody or some shit. I don't know.
Yeah.
His beard has taken over his brain.
It just sort of started growing backwards. Like, after a certain point, hair can't grow much longer because it just starts getting split ends and it breaks and it's really fragile. And his beard, foreseeing that, started growing into his skull and it's now wrapped around all the grooves and crannies in his brain and it's controlling him.
He's a cer I want to see him do a ceremony really bad. Cuz I just don't know what that looked like.
How much do you think he loves Anton LaVey? Like, on a scale of one to blood sacrifices.
I would go all the way to blood sacrifices.
Yeah. I mean, I think Rorschach is sort of the Tyler Durden of the DC sort of megaverse, insofar as, in at least some interpretations, Durden is supposed to be a cautionary tale of, like, look at this asshole, don't do that with your life. But that is not how he has been received. And the same is true of Rorschach. I feel like nobody's supposed to read Rorschach and be like, this is a testament to how good an idea vigilantism is. But they do. They do. They think that. I mean, maybe I'm being overly optimistic. Maybe more creative Rorschach. Like, you know what? The only problem with Batman, he doesn't do enough murders. But
aren't you afraid of Big Mac? I'm honestly one of those people. Rorschach is still my favorite part of Watchmen.
Insofar as you think he's compelling, interesting, and potentially relatable, or insofar as you think he makes good choices? Because if it's the latter, we have a problem.
he's a compelling character because he's obviously, he's not the smartest guy in the room, but he's the most moral, and he's like, not moral in a sense of, like, this is right and this is wrong, but in the sense of, like, he actually has human feelings and is, like, the only one besides the owl dude who's, like, we're getting way off course. We're getting, like, into some dark, dark territory here. And he's supposed to be the dark one. And it's like, no, he's a murderer, he's a sociopath, but he's a sociopath with a heart, which is always my favorite character.
I think that by definition makes him not a sociopath.
Yeah, sociopaths are not supposed to have hearts.
Psychopath, maybe?
Psychopath, that makes, okay, he's a psychopath with a heart.
Yeah, I mean, I think allegorically his place in Watchmen is to be, like, the idea of a hyper-violent person with a moral code. And that's, of course, always the nebulous moral issue at the heart of superheroes. Is, like, is it possible to be a moral person and do the things that superheroes do? That's probably the whole part of Watchmen insofar as it has one, because of course you have questions of the greater good in terms of, like, Ozymandias being like, but why not fix all of it though, but at what cost, lol. And then you have Rorschach, who's like hyper violent to individuals but opposes like a massive scale darkness, so there's that moral take on like what is and isn't moral. It's just a microcosm of blowing up all of New York. And then you have Owlman, who's like, but is any of this moral? And then I guess Silk Spectre is perpetually underdeveloped, and then also overdeveloped, because he got people who love drawing titties. But the... I think I've said titties more often on this podcast than in my entire 25-ish years of life to date, but let's just keep rolling with this. Keep the titty train a-rolling. Silk Spectre is sort of the issue of, like, is it right to then push people into that? Is it right to take the image of doing good in, immoral or selfish ways, maybe? I don't know. It's fucking stretching it to try to read anything interesting into Silk Spectre, because she's basically just there for Owlman and what's his name to fight over. And then, of course, Dr. Manhattan is, like, the whole thing even bigger. Yeah, I guess really there is a reading of Watchmen where it just scales up from Owlman doing not that much violence and worrying about it to Rorschach doing enormous violence, but on a small scale, and sort of worrying about it, to Ozymandias doing planet-sized stuff, and sort of worrying about it, and then, you know, at what size does collateral damage start to matter?
Yeah.
I think that's one reading of Watchmen, and I'm sure I've read that somewhere before, if not spelled out like a chain of fucking being. So, yeah, I don't know. I think Rorschach, there's a reason Rorschach is so popular, because not many people, I think, would sacrifice all of New York for potentially world peace, because most people don't think that trade-off would work. And most people who are reading superhero comics do agree with a certain amount of vigilanteism. Or they think there's appeal in a certain amount of vigilanteism, even if they don't agree with it in practice. So Rorschach is, I think, right where most people are experiencing that moral issue themselves. Because even if they don't personally want to go out and do vigilanteism, I think most people who are reading superhero comics agree that a certain amount of violence in certain circumstances is necessary in the name of the greater good, or can be justified in the name of the greater good.
Yeah.
So Rorschach is like the heightened version of that, plus he's like the most readable, least boring character in it, although I always liked Dr. Manhattan just because, like, haha, what are feelings? But...
yeah. You need to have some sort of... He's the narrator throughout the whole thing, too.
Yeah.
He's the moral voice without having moral... He's... I don't know. It's weird.
He's... I mean... He has made, throughout, explicit choices about the amount of violence he thinks is moral or ethical. I would be curious to hear how that's playing out in DC, and how, because Watchmen was always supposed to be, I think, a more heightened, because if you're going to be interested in the issues of moral fallout over violence, that doesn't really happen in the DC universe as it was. And it tends not to have, like, lasting violence impact, I think. Like, things get tidied up.
Yeah.
Whereas in Watchmen...
Superman dies, comes back.
Yeah. Whereas in Watchmen, fuckers just die. So it'll be interesting to see whether, like, how those two things pull on each other. What the reciprocal impact of those two philosophies of the impact of violence. How those articulate themselves is... as those universes become integrated.
I honestly think they're... I don't know if they're going to bring back the whole team. I hope they do, because what's the point of bringing back Doctor... And Dr. Manhattan is back to bring back the whole team, probably. Because he feels bad about the whole giant squid alien thing.
Dr. Manhattan does?
Well, he feels bad about something. I don't know what. He's trying to bring, like, someone back. I don't know who.
Wasn't the whole point of Dr. Manhattan's arc that he just, like, went to live in his space palace and didn't have any feelings anymore?
He ends up on the... Yeah, he goes to space and is like, I'm done with Shaw. But apparently he misses something. Or he's got a weird, it's totally gonna be Silk Spectre. Something happened to Silk Spectre and he's trying to bring back that universe for some reason, probably.
But the entire Dr. Manhattan plot is like, how can God allow tragedy on Earth? And the answer is God doesn't really see it as a tragedy. That, you know, God in his human form may have had personal connections, but God in his God form is no longer able to maintain those. It's pretty Christian in some ways, probably. Like, you could do readings of Dr. Manhattan as Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, probably. Shit. But... Thumbs down to that whole thing. To Watchmen, to bring back Watchmen, to just thumbs down to all of it. I bet.
It's just no good.
It's all bad. Comics are bad. Let's end them. No more comics. Comics are illegal now.
Comics are all bad.
Yeah.
The end.
The end. On that note. Comics are over, and so is this episode of The Trades.